Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, January 15th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Alaska Board of Game advanced a pair of reports that call for trapping wolves in southeast Alaska in an attempt to help deer populations recover. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Two feasibility studies look at wolf management in what the state refers to as Unit 1A and Unit 3. Unit 1A surrounds Ketchikan, Metlakatla, Hyder, and more. The plan there is to eliminate wolves from Gravina Island. It's estimated to cost about $350,000 over 5 years. In Unit 3, the study proposes trapping on the Lindenberg Peninsula near Petersburg, as well as nearby Wawadski and Mitkoff Islands. The goal there would be to remove about 80% of the wolves rather than all. But a consortium of environmental organizations blasted both plans. The Greater Southeast Alaska Conservation Community, Greenpeace, the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and others wrote joint letters opposing both plans. They argue that it's unknown how much the deer population might recover if the wolves are eliminated. They blame Gravina Island's low deer population on poor winter habitat, not wolves. And they say there are flaws with the Department of Fish and Game's assessments. Similar arguments are made against the proposal near Petersburg. The groups say the study is based on flawed harvest objectives, and again that the habitat is the problem, not the wolves. They urge the state to resist further loss of habitat due to logging. The acceptance of both studies by the Board of Game is far from the last step in the process. Board Vice Chairman Ted Spraker said the board's action does not mean that it's adopted the plan. Department of Fish and Game staff are expected to bring back a more refined proposal at the Board of Game's next meeting. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Alaska Board of Game on Monday rejected once again calls to open big game hunting seasons earlier for residents than for non-residents. A total of 6 proposals restricting non-resident access to hunting were before the board at its Sitka meeting. The board considered 2 and took no action on the others due to their similarity. According to Board Chair Ted Spraker, variations on this proposal had been sent 4 or 5 times to the board at its last few meetings by the same group of folks. He said he could not support proposals mainly because they were too broad. The board preferred to look at hunting seasons on a case-by-case basis and take into consideration species differences and scientific information. Board member Bob Mumford had reviewed the comments submitted with the proposals and understood the implications.
This board is made up of residents. We are all residents on this board, and I think we've taken a lot of effort to protect residents. We all feel for that. You know, I've seen some hits in there that we are all trying to take care of the guiding industry too much and not protecting the residents, and I just don't accept that as being accurate.
Mumford went on to say, "We are a conservation board." Board member Nathan Turner noted that non-residents are the only people who hunt some areas of the state, typically far from communities. He said that the license fees they paid were significant. Giving them up would be a devastating blow to wildlife conservation. The Southeast meeting of the State Board of Game meets through today in Sitka. Today's agenda begins at 8:30 a.m. with Sitka area proposals. Arctic and Western region proposals will be taken up in the afternoon. A Yakutat family is counting its blessings after nearly losing one of its own during the January 4th earthquake. KCAW's Ann Bryce has the story.
On the afternoon of Friday, January 4th, 9-year-old Tana went on a walk in Yakutat, like she did most days. When she didn't come home that evening, the family wasn't really worried.
I went out that night looking for her, but I didn't see her anywhere, so I figured she may be visiting somebody, you know?
Tana is a dog, a pit bull blue heeler mix, and her name means copper in Tlingit. Her owner, Ron Bowler, says she often visits apartments around the town's community center. Hours later, she always returns home, sometimes even too full to eat her own dinner. A little before midnight, a 7.5 magnitude earthquake shook southeast Alaska. Tana was still nowhere to be found. Bowler thought she might have sensed the tremor and went to hide someplace. So the family waited, hoping she'd turn up after the excitement died down. Tana has a special place in Bowler's heart. After his mother died, his son gave him the dog to help him heal from the devastating loss. He says Tana was the one who helped him recover from his deep depression. The next evening, when Tana was still missing, Bowler became really worried. He thought maybe the worst had happened. She'd been attacked by wolves or hit by a car and left on the side of the road. But at 8 o'clock, a neighbor called Bowler and told him Another person heard a distant barking by her house under a building.
So my son ran down there, and there was a door there open underneath the building, and he called the dog, and she barked. He heard her barking, and so it sounded like it was coming from the corner, so he flashed the light over there, and there was nothing there. So he called her again, and she barked again, and it sounded like it was coming from the other corner. And he flashed the light over there, and nothing was there. And it kept going like this for a few minutes. The sound was traveling around under the building, and he finally realized that she was barking, and the sound was going up into the floor joists and traveling that way.
Then he saw an old abandoned well, about 4 feet across and 35 feet deep.
And my son looked down there, and there was our dog.
Within minutes, they had a 12-person rescue team on the job. The crew lowered Buller's son, JP, down into the well to fetch the family dog.
And when he got down in there, he was standing in water that was waist deep. So the poor dog had been standing on her hind legs for at least 24 hours in that well, trying to keep herself alive.
After they raised Tana up, they heaped warm blankets on her and huddled around. Her nails were scraped down and bloody, and she caught a case of Giardia, an infection caused by a parasite found in dirty water. But all in all, she's in good shape now.
Oh, I was totally relieved. It was a wonderful feeling. It was, you know, I was thinking to myself, oh, man, I hope this isn't the way the New Year's starting out, you know. And what does it tell me? It tells me if you're good people and you live a good, honest life, good things happen for you. My wife said a lot of prayers, you know, and that, she said it was the prayers. So I'll have to give the prayers some credit, too.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
Outside of Southeast, last year was a bad year for king salmon across much of Alaska. Low numbers of returning kings resulted in restrictions and closures to commercial, sport, and subsistence fisheries in many areas, including Upper Cook Inlet and across much of the YK Delta region. Representative Bob Herron put forward a bill last session to create a special $50 million fund to pay for new scientific research into the life history of Chinook salmon by individuals or organizations not in the Department of Fish and Game. The bill didn't make it out of the House Finance Committee last time, but Herron thinks, in light of the summer's failed returns, it may start to move when the legislature convenes today. Mike Mason reports.
And so we're trying to create an opportunity that there is research that is not done by the Department of Fish and Game, but in concert with them, of course.
Herron's bill is House Bill 49, and it calls for the endowment fund to be managed by the Commissioner of Revenue for a return of at least 5%. Herron asserts that finding out what's impacting the kings can provide a heads up about future impacts to the natural environment.
Chinook salmon is really the canary in the coal mine. If we can figure out what's causing their decline, then that species, if we can improve on their return, that will only be beneficial to the other four species of salmon as well.
The goal of House Bill 49 is to use block grants to fund specific research projects put forward by organizations across the state that would be required to come up with a match of 25% of the grant amount. Herron says it's likely that some of the specifics about who would receive funds and what kinds of research projects would be funded will be worked out in the committee process, but he hopes the money can be used in both the near shore and the offshore environment.
We want to know the whole spectrum of what's causing it and how one piece, maybe unknown to most, is contributing significantly more than other contributing factors.
Herron's bill includes language for a board to help manage the fund and the grant process. The board would include the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and six public members representing different regions of Alaska. Herron anticipates last year's low Chinook numbers will result in some added momentum for House Bill 49.
It's our culture. It's our identity. And so if Alaskans, for whatever reason, can't figure out what's happening, then we're going to lose that identity, and we're going to lose something probably far more valuable than just the sustenance. We're going to lose a way of life.
House Bill 49 seeks to create the Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Endowment Fund. The legislature would still have to come up with the money that would go into the fund, and Herron has been using the $50 million figure as a starting point.
That amount of money at that particular time should be enough where we would have a continuing research program that's comprehensive.
House Bill 49 will be read into the record and receive committee assignments Tuesday, which is the first day of the 28th Alaska Legislature. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Sitka police responded to a report of a death on Sunday afternoon. The body of 84-year-old Wayne Westover was found in his apartment. He was a longtime resident of Sitka and the uncle of former Mayor Cheryl Westover. His grandnephew, Mike Coleman, found him when he went to check on him on Sunday. He said he would often take Westover shopping, where his great uncle would ride his cart around looking for specials. Westover had diabetes and used a wheelchair. Officials determined he died of natural causes. The 2013 Alaska Marine Science Symposium is scheduled to begin Monday in Anchorage. Organizers say more than 1,000 marine scientists and resource managers are expected to attend sessions at the Hotel Captain Cook. First-day presentations are geared to the general public and include sessions on ocean acidification, invasive species tied to tsunami debris, and the life cycle of Chinook salmon in the marine environment. More than 70 presentations will be made over 3 days that follow. Scientists will make presentations January 22nd on the Arctic. The focus January 23rd will be on the Bering Sea and the Aleutian Islands. And presentations January 24th will be on the Gulf of Alaska research. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Today in Sitka, expect rain diminishing in the afternoon, highs around 45, with south wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, becoming west 5 to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight's going to be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in the evening, areas of fog with lows around 38, west wind 5 to 15 miles per hour, becoming southwest 5 miles per hour late. And Wednesday, expect a chance of rain in the morning, then rain in the afternoon, highs around 41. You're listening to KCAW.